Hello, Taurus, and welcome to part two of your 2014 birthday reading. If my voice sounds a little bit different, I have switched microphones to try to cut out some of the background noise. I'm not even sure it made it onto the last recording, but it was enough that it concerned me. This one may make me sound a little bit more nasally. So we talked a lot about relationships and your relationship patterns and what might be going on behind the scenes of a partner, but really about how this is your rethinking the whole concept of what a relationship is and going through a kind of change of major era, a kind of change of phase in your life. And I would just repeat one point, which is that Saturn in your opposite sign, Saturn opposite the sun, or Saturn moving through your seventh house, is one of those before and after phases. That when you look at your life, when you consider the first, you know, the 4 years or so before right now, and the 4 years or so after right now, in hindsight, you'll see this was a turning point. And my role as an astrologer is to get you into the turning point and help you put your hands on the steering wheel so that you can turn in the direction that you want to turn. Now, for as complex as the relationship scenario is in your chart, what is impressively more complex is what is going on in your own sign. And I didn't realize this is what was going on, what was there, until recently when I took a look at the chart for this morning's solar eclipse in Taurus yesterday before I did Planet Waves FM. Worth listening to, a kind of adjunct or extension of this reading, and realize there are 19 planets and minor planets and asteroids in Taurus right now. That's a lot. That there's always one or two signs where the planets are concentrated. Well, usually two or three, and they seem to be right now. Taurus, Pisces, and Sagittarius are getting a lot of focus. And let me start with some of the planets I'm more experienced with, or the ones that stand out a little bit more, and describe how those point you to a different level of analysis of the relationship situation that you're in. Because they do speak of relationships. But mostly the planets that are in Taurus right now speak of your relationship to yourself and the rapidly changing growth level that you're at, such that you are being granted a perspective, a point of view that is quite unusual and that places you in the role of, if not healer, catalyst for the growth and change of others by being a catalyst for growth and change in your own life. There are two things that are telling me this. Two recent ingresses into Taurus that are telling me this. The first is, and I talk a lot about this point in the Planet Waves FM that has the April 28th date on it. So it's I talk about for about 20 minutes about what 1992 QB1, a planet that recently ingressed your sign, is. So I don't want to take a lot of time here to talk about that, but I want to say that it was the first outer planet discovered beyond Pluto, orbiting our sun. Now, there's a lot of those now, but the first one to pierce the veil of Pluto, to go past that kind of imaginary barrier of Pluto, was this thing discovered in 1992, which has been left with its provisional name. It has not been given a name, which is extremely unusual for a planet that's so famous and so well-established to not be named. But there's a number of reasons for that, and I think that the not being named part is an interesting description of it being kind of egoless, not having mythological baggage grafted onto it. Like every one of these other planets is named for a mythological figure, and that tends to bias the astrology, and it can be helpful, but it's also biasing and not facilitating using the subtler methods of understanding what's going on. In any case, Pluto is this kind of death lord in Roman mythology, the lord of the underworld, and would kidnap people, which meant they would die, and he was invisible, he wore this helmet. And all through the decades since the discovery of Pluto in 1930, there has been a death obsession. And we could say that Civil War was pretty bad and World War I was pretty bad, but hey, there was a long break between the Civil War and World War I. Then with the discovery of Pluto, there was just like a war every 15 minutes. QB1 takes us past that. It takes us past this concept that death is the most important thing. And it leads us into a more transcendent consciousness. It is more about an understanding of how to get beyond the fear of death and surrender. And those who are gifted with the ability to do that and with the ability to help others find the way, I think hold a very important place in our culture. And whatever you may do professionally, and whatever your spiritual leanings may be, the presence of this outer planet entering your sign for the first time in, 200 and something years, says to me that you are ready for another level of consciousness, and that level of consciousness involves the whole concept of surrender. And one of the ways we see the lack of surrender in Taurus is through its tendency toward extreme attachment and jealousy. As with your opposite sign, Scorpio, sometimes it even seems more kind of accentuated in Taurus. That's a flip of a coin. Is that the attachment and jealousy seem to be a kind of a birthright, in your opinion. And that does not make anyone happy. The thing that 1992 QB1 to me is about is letting go of that sensation that jealousy and attachment and control are a birthright, and indicating that they are something that would be very wise to put on the healing agenda. And QB1, an outer planet, more or less makes that inevitable. Now, shortly after QB1 entered Taurus, that was followed the last weekend in April by Juno. And Juno modifies or expands on the story. I've written a lot about Juno at the end of 2012. Let me make a note to myself to put some of that writing with this report. That's going to be the stuff involving the Mayan calendar. Hold on. Okay. And its emphasis on Juno, right? In the last day of this 5,125-year cycle, 1.82 million days or something like that, on the last day of that cycle, the winter solstice of 2012, the sun and Juno were in a conjunction. And so while the world didn't end at 2012 and there apparently was not a mess at ascension or anything like that, what we had was a reminder of how important it is to be able to understand one's emotional needs in relationships and to be able to articulate those needs before resentment sets in. Basically, we're talking about understanding oneself well enough to be able to express one's needs. The only way to do that, in my opinion, is to know yourself intimately. And so in my reading of Juno in your sign, this is an invitation to know yourself more intimately. And indeed, to be so close to yourself that it's not really necessary to be with someone. It might be nice to be with someone, but it's not the kind of thing that is absolutely necessary. Now, there's elements of contact that are necessary, and I know there's a whole controversy around whether sex is legitimate outside of marriage or the boyfriend-girlfriend scenario, but remember that our culture gives us a very limited set of choices about how to experience fulfilling sex. We're really told there's only one. We're told that hookup culture is bullshit, and we're told that the only legitimate form of sex is through marriage or the official boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. I mean, notice this in all the discussions of sex, that those who experience some alternate way of doing things, they might have sexual friends, they might be bisexual and have relationships with a man and a woman, or men and with women, mostly it's all poo-pooed. It's all just said to be bullshit, because everybody, what they really want is the one official certified Cinderella relationship. And I think that is a gross distortion. And I think that that distortion begins to resolve itself when one's relationship to oneself becomes sufficiently close that you can see through the whole relationship paradigm itself. When you are holding more of a neutral charge in your energy field rather than a desperate charge in your energy field, and then it can become clearer that what we want is to be whole people who are able to connect with other whole people. Now, that's, of course, easier said than done, and it subverts all kinds of cultural programming. But to me, the imagery of this beautiful collection of planets in your sign is saying, first and foremost, make contact with yourself sufficient that you do not need others to complete you. Be complete. And it's likely that the relationship scenario, as it's playing out, as I've described with Saturn, Mars, and Pluto on the other side of your chart, all of that complexity and all of that kind of house clearing and or fear of intimacy is providing you with an opportunity to come back to yourself. And this is not an environment or a scenario that's going to last forever. Things will normalize at a certain point, and certain opportunities will arise, and quite possibly later in the year, the opportunity to change your living environment in such a way that involves living with someone, because you want more room, and you'll have some kind of a golden opportunity around your home space. And for many people, the golden opportunity is the living with the right lover. That might happen, no matter what your situation is right now, no matter how far removed it seems. You get a kind of a wild card later in the year. But now you have a chance to get to know yourself. And it's being presented as a kind of an enforced situation. It's being presented to you as a thing that you might not like that much. You wish things could be a certain way, but there's this benefit of being put in a room with yourself, essentially. The other thing is that Juno is about to make a conjunction, just making it today, actually, to a centaur called Bionor. Bionor is something I don't really talk about very much, but it's a centaur, and it's one of the named centaurs. And as one of the named centaurs, it is high on the list of planets that rapidly accelerates growth. And Juno plus Bionor is a kind of a crusading quality. And I would say that if you're going to be on a crusading quality, let that be healthy in some way. You do not need to certainly crusade to change anyone, and you don't really need to crusade to change yourself. I would say if you're going to be on a mission, let it be a mission of self-knowledge. Another really interesting point in Taurus is Tantalus. That today is in the Chiron Discovery degree. You might be familiar with some of my Planet Waves writing previously from the Grand Cross, where I pointed out the fact that during the Grand Cross, during the exact alignment of the Grand Cross on the 23rd, the Sun was in the Chiron Discovery degree, and that indicated a healing potential not obvious anywhere else in the chart. Discovery degree of Chiron is 3.5 degrees of your sign Taurus. And currently Tantalus is there. And Tantalus is about the T's. And the T's is one of the things that is in the healing spotlight. And so I would suggest that you be conscious of all things involving teasing and being teased, particularly where sex and food are concerned. In the myth, it's fruit, an obvious metaphor for sex, and the word tantalizing is probably used more to describe food in modern usage than it's used to describe sex, but still, there's a sexual implication to the concept of a tease. What is it about teasing? There is a question. Tantalus is retrograde, and so I would suggest asking that question. Do you feel that it's worth your while to tease anyone? Do you withhold from yourself in some way? Do you follow that book, The Rules, that says never accept a date for the following Friday after Tuesday or something like that, just so that you don't seem too available? What do you do with your availability? What is your concept of availability? Do you feel that it is okay to be available? Do you feel comfortable being available, or do you feel more comfortable in a place of withholding? Good questions to ask, especially with Tantalus in the healing spotlight. Another point in Taurus is Hephaestios. Now, this, I believe, is the Greek version of Vulcan. And Vulcan is a counterpart of your sign. I think of Vulcan as being the inner or masculine element of Taurus. Conveniently, right in Taurus, right now, and in a 1 degree and 6-7 arc minute conjunction with the Sun and the Moon during this morning's eclipse. This also repeats the message of embrace your opposite as something inside you. We live in a culture where there's this hyper-polarization of gender. At the same time, there's all of this transgender stuff going on. Bisexuality is always left out of the picture. So we've got all this transgender stuff going on, people who are fusing their genders. And at the same time, in another neighborhood, a radical fusion of the guys being more macho than macho. Really, this goes through many age groups. And the women wanting to be more feminine than feminine. The thing is, with the older ladies, older meaning, you know, over 21, okay, I'm kidding, a little bit older than that, it's necessary to take care of themselves. And it's very hard to be the waify, submissive, ditzy image of hyper-feminine and still really take care of yourself. At a certain point, and taking care of yourself, a certain self-consciousness, self-awareness, and seriousness must transcend the girly girl thing. So if you're female, you're at something of an advantage because you do have to integrate your gender roles more than, for example, most men who really don't have to integrate their gender roles, your gender roles. There's not really an imperative unless, of course, you want to be closer to women. Then it's a very helpful thing to integrate your gender roles. So that's my take on Hephaestios, is an integration of the opposite of Vulcan. Very interesting mythology and a whole world of information out of esoteric astrology, which I sometimes talk about in annual editions. But the upshot is Alice Bailey describes the true inner meaning of Taurus, the whole concept of Taurus, as being the blacksmith shop of the soul. And deep in that blacksmith shop is Mr. Hephaestios working on his iron with his hammer and the smoky environment of the smithy. Okay, another planet is minor planet is very close to this eclipse, Tauro. Tauro is about the sudden onset. Tauro is about coming on strong. And there's a lot of bravado in Tauro. And there is an invitation to be direct with Tauro, to not let yourself say, well, I always have the option of being a wimp. I guess I'll take that option. Tauro, by the way, is the bull. And, you know, kind of hilarious that it's conjunct this solar eclipse in Taurus. Okay, and here we get to the theme of the message that you convey. And there's a series of these statements in your chart. And they all boil down to, there's the conjunction of Mercury, Phaethon, Osiris, Heracles, Dionysus. Well, that's a lot. And then there's another one of Iris, Admetos. Without breaking down each one of these planets, which I've more or less done with my notes, the summary of this is, be clear what message you are sending. Remember that everything you do communicates a message. What you say, how you dress, how you speak, what you write, the words you use, the images that you use, what you post to your social media accounts. And there is, I am noticing, a rather large disconnect between sending messages and knowing that the message means something and being clear that it is vitally important only to communicate what you actually mean. And so to do this, you need to be something of a self-editor and look at or read the message that you're sending and then ask yourself whether it actually conforms to what you actually want to be messaging. And this will be vital in your relationship encounters because you don't want to leave yourself a lot of room to be misunderstood. And therefore, I suggest that you take on the burden of communication and make sure that you are the one who is clearly and intentionally expressing that which you want to actually say. There's another theme on the overall larger theme of messaging about speaking from a deep place. This there's a triple combination of Sedna, Iris, Admetos. And this triple conjunction is all about the depth of what you say. And this is an invitation and a reminder that you don't need to be caught up in the prevailing superficiality of the world, that it is not only safe for you to go deep, but for your own growth and your own acceptance, it is essential that you go deep. And the form in which you do that is up to you, whether you do it in writing or whether you do it in art or whether you do it in conversation and you invite people to listen to you and speak to you. There is a reminder here that depth is healthy and that you can let something out that might be deeply trapped inside. And the more consciously and the more, lovingly that you do this, the better. Because that's what it's all about. Okay, a few points here on money and career. One of the interesting things about the fixed cross right now is that there are no major points in your 10th house. That's Aquarius. There has been, for many years, by many years, I mean going back to, well, really, let's see, the early 2000s. The mid-90s. Since the mid-90s, I knew it was longer. Since the mid-90s, there has been persistent outer planet activity in Aquarius. One planet after the next has come through. This has created both confusion and opportunity on the level of your professional aspirations. It's not been any kind of a guarantee of success, but it has definitely put you under some influence of making sure that you at least have a mission. And I trust that by now you have found some vital elements of your mission. If you don't feel that you're fully on mission, which you may very well feel, that you have identified the vital elements of your mission. But now, for the first time in all of these years, really since right after I became an astrologer, there is no outer planet, slow-moving outer planet activity in Aquarius. And that may leave you feeling a little bit adrift. And I would suggest that you be conscious of this fact and that there is not going to be the kind of enforced guidance that there has been in the past, nor is there so likely to be the kind of crisis or critical turning points that there were in the past. And even in the fairly recent past of like the last 4 years, there's been some spectacular activity in Aquarius that, if it did its work and if you did yours, set you on a direction that you can grow into for a while. And without outer planet activity in your 10th house, it is possible that because you've had it for so long and depended on it for so long, that you can run adrift, that you might lose your bearings. And so I suggest that you be very conscious of maintaining your bearings. This is especially true if you're in any kind of a situation where you can do without a lot of money, or where, as your chart's indicating, you're a very good survivor financially. You are excellent at making do with what you have. Personally, I'm something of a materialist in that I believe that participation in the economy is helpful in keeping us on track with our financial goals. And by participation in the economy, I do mean having a working car and a nice home, having the freedom to occasionally go someplace that you want to go. Those privileges require, if they're going to be done responsibly and not all just, shoved on vastly expensive credit, require a level of real commitment, financial commitment. And so that in turn entails the ability to do what you do and have it be productive for you. But you've got a gift here of being able to subsist on very little. You have a kind of a, this is going to last a while too, a kind of a, not exactly magic, but it might feel like that, way of just always having things finally add up and somebody always comes through with the thing that you need, or you're down to $1.50 in your bank account, and then that's the day the freelance job comes in. This is the kind of thing you've got going on, and I wouldn't lean on that too much. I would not lean on your magic power of survival. Rather, I would set your sights a little bit higher than that and make sure that you are giving yourself some a cushion and some room to grow, and that you are setting your own goals. The nice thing about outer planets running through the 10th house is that you always have this sense of there's this goal that I have. Whether it's a viable goal or realistic goal or your favorite goal, nonetheless, there's a goal, and it's usually helpful to work toward a goal of some kind If for no other reason than it at least gets you someplace, and then you can always change directions or change your mind. And without that, you need to set your own goals, and I think focus on making sure that you're not going in circles, basically. And you can do that. You know, you've learned enough, obviously, with so much outer planet activity going through your 10th house, you've learned how to not work in circles. And you could make a list of all the ways that you've learned this and all of the opportunities you've had that have encouraged you to stay on a track, to work toward a goal, to complete that goal, to work toward your next goal, and to see what you learn and to move on. But the good news here is that you will have a lot of resources to work with, and you have this ability to subsist on very little. Not the ideal state for a Taurus, but I've noticed that this thing about Taurians always having money is not supported for much longer than after those old astrology books written between the 20s and the 60s were written, and that the real gift that Taurians have, which is very much accentuated in your chart right now, is the ability to always be able to survive. Now, that doesn't work so well if you like to survive in higher fashion, if you like to, you know, eat good food and not, you know, live on ramen noodles. You're not in college anymore, probably, and you don't, you know, you need to have a higher standard. So I would say keep that all in mind. And remember, there's a connection between the goals that you set and the subsidiary economic goals. And I would keep the goal of the mission first and the money second, so that you are living in accord with a deeper value than the money that you have or that you want to acquire. Okay. That is about what I have to say for right now about your astrology. There is, I guess there's one other thing, which is that let's talk about this for a second. In the second half of the year, a lot of astrology, most of the year's most important astrology, will be water under the bridge by June 1st. And so that leaves more than the second half of the year with less or without any really wild, spectacular, intense astrology, with the exception of eclipses that are coming up in the fall, which are likely to be less challenging than, for example, the eclipses of 2013 for you because of and 2012 because of the emphasis on Scorpio and Taurus of those eclipses. The eclipses are now moving away from your sign. So in the second half of the year, the big news is going to be Jupiter changing signs and ingressing your fourth house. And I watched the fourth house transits of Taurians really carefully, because so many of the Taurians I know never move. Once they move into a place, that's it. They're going to stay there. And it's kind of funny, and I've never quite seen anyone, except people with a Taurus sun in particular, do this. I can name a Taurus moon person who also fits this pattern perfectly. But lots of Taurus sun people, they find their spot and they grow into it like a tree growing into the ground. Unless you're an ant, that tree is not going to get up and take a walk. And so when I see fourth house transits for people with strong Taurus signatures, I wonder what's going on with their relationship to their living space. And fourth house Taurus transit means Leo, and Jupiter is going to ingress Leo pretty soon. And then shortly after it does that, there's going to be some contact with Mars. Mars square Jupiter, in which I believe goes from Scorpio to Leo when that finally happens. And there's a little cautionary note here about having the big improvement to your living space be moving in with someone else. I think there's many valid reasons for you to strive for your independence and to emphasize your relationship to yourself as the primary relationship. And there's some tension indicated with the Mars square Jupiter that might manifest as a time-sensitive opportunity, that might manifest as pressure, that might manifest as, oh, wow, this is the thing that I really want that's never going to happen again. And I'm not saying this is likely to be negative in any way. I'm just suggesting that you think carefully and that you work with Plan A and Plan B, and that somewhere above Plan A be the idea that one of the most vital purposes of your being on the planet right now is to experience and emphasize your own independence, your self-actualization outside of relationship, not basing your identity on the fact of being in a relationship or the person that you're in a relationship with, and see what that's like for a while. It is possible to be in relationships or relationship with that going on, but not if you totally fuse and submit to that experience as the only and most important thing that there is. So I'm suggesting here there's some balance being called for, and the pendulum is swinging in your direction now, as opposed to in the direction of your relationships, which are likely to keep you involved, invested, and occupied. But there is a strong calling, particularly with this extraordinary eclipse this morning in your sign, creating an opening for your awareness of your potential, for your self-potential, for who you are and what you can become as you focus primarily on allowing yourself to grow and allowing your human interactions to come from the growth that you're experiencing, the new way you're seeing yourself rather than the previous way that you're seeing yourself. And being clear that the people that you want in your life are the ones who relate to you as the person you are now rather than as the person that you were in the past. Or for that matter, someone else from their past. All right. So I'm going to take a pause and set up the tarot reading, and in which I will have some astrological afterthoughts, and then I will spread the cards and read that. The music you're listening to, by the way, was co-written by Daniel Sternstein and myself, and this is the theme for Taurus 2014. I'll let that play out. All right, I'll catch you in a bit.